I don't think Kennedy sees the ground. He just sees this crowd dynamic, and he doesn't know the ground of media that way McLuhan is, unless he said something there. Did he say something?
Right, well, he seemed to be exploring, like, his idea seemed to be that crowds, the mutations of the different types of crowd, that crowd was the basic ground.
Yeah, the anthropomorphic. He's putting the anthropomorphic in there and not seeing the technical ground. But we definitely have different so the kids, and we could come to a punchline here, the kids today are constantly in touch to try to rebuild the fact as a river. And it's both blood and nervous. So that is the fear, that there's no more river run.
Right. Right. And that the that the free flow will be forever.
And that would be the paralysis.
I'm going to close out for a minute because I'm going to eat my...
What's your last thought, Corbin? What's your last thought?
I'll be back in a bit, but the mask is a very important interval or disguise or what shall we call it? Essentially, you are always peeling the onion. You are always peeling the mask. The mask gets deeper and deeper as you look into it. If you were to look into a mirror, there's 14 to 22 different dimensions in a mirror if you were to look at them in the right angle. But the mask, we are constantly hiding behind the mask. When we do a portrait of ourselves, put it like this. If you were back in them great old days and the king or the queen said, paint me a picture of my beautiful face, and you were not the great artist that you inclined to be, if you painted a portrait of the face, which is actually a mask, and they would, that you have such beautiful skills. But the artist inside knows that it is a mask. That is where you start with the beginning of knowing that everything is a mask and that it's constantly changing. And that if you look at the mask hard enough, that's one of the things about Mary Shelley's book Frankenstein. Essentially, the doctor creates his image and his likeness of what he would like to be. Bigger muscles, bigger this, bigger that. And no matter how grotesque it is that he has to go digging around through graves to get the parts and all the above, and then he has to basically get rid of the monster. The monster comes back and says, build me a wife. This is another mask. The mask is such an important narrative in our culture.
Yeah, no, you're correct, Corbin, and McLuhan makes a lot out of the mask. But I would say you've got masking going on. And I'm not going to ask Brian what masking means in the recording industry, but you've got the chemical body mask, you've got the astral mask, you've got the TV mask, the chip body mask, and the mystery body mask. This is the masking. Not just simple chemical body mask. So what does masking mean in the recording studio, Brian?
I don't know.
I hear them. They talk about masking recording. Maybe Corbin knows. Do you know what masking is in the recording industry, Corbin?
A masking can be done via computer. It can be via instruments that are basically from all around the world. For instance, when I spent my time in Dublin, what was amazing is that they would sit in the bars all day and play this Celtic music that's amazing. It just brings you to a different ecstasy, a different joy of being. Now, MDMA, I'm not a fucking raver by any means. Brian said it was speed. It's not speed. Pure MDMA. MDMA is both a hallucinogenic, it's a sensitivity drug. Basically what happens is all these youngsters, the pure stuff, the speed stuff is the garbage. Back then, that was the stuff that made everything so beautiful. Not an LSD or psychedelic experience. You would hug each other. You would feel love for each other, a genuine connectedness.
Just that's what the MA stands for. Like, I know that it's, very deep methamphetamine, but it is a methamphetamine, even if it doesn't seem speedy or normal. Like, it's still...
There is a subneutron or a subproton in there that is a amphetamine, but it's MDMA. You'd have to get my chemistry books out. I'm a little bit out of it. I'll be back in touch and just give me about 2 hours and catch me up when I come back.
Thanks for contributing, Corbin. Once I finish eating here, I'll find out what masking you want to look it up. But we've got a few other people here, and they aren't saying anything. You're welcome to contribute here. If not, you're stuck with me and Brian talking unless we play some recordings or play music or something. Is there anything else, Brian, maybe not related to the McLuhan task, that you would like to talk about or has been occupying your perceptions and patterns lately?
Well, you were when you posted a thing a few days ago about that Eric McLuhan and Lance Strait.
Formal causality, right?
Yeah, about formal causality. And it reminded me that that formal causality was at the heart of that. In that book about formal causality, there's a couple different parts where McLuhan comes back to this whole, his kind of conspiracy meme of the big secrets.
Yeah.
Only puny secrets require protection. Big discoveries are protected by public incredulity.
Yes.
I was reminded that it was formal causality that he was saying, that that's the thing that everyone is allergic to, that they're terrified of it.
Yeah.
That secret will keep itself because people don't want to acknowledge formal causality. So it's just... it's just curious whether that's a coming out of the visual culture thing, or is that just a...
No, I got an answer for that.
Apparently terrifying.
Yeah. McLuhan said in the early 70s, well, he knew it before, but he started telling buddies, new discovery. I've discovered why Western man won't study the effects of media, because it's an invasion of their private unconscious or their private identity. The whole privacy issue was threatened if you began to look at what the environment was doing to people. And that's, you could think back in the 50s, 60s, people were individual billiard balls, and they didn't think they were programmed by anything. They thought ideas were more powerful. And, by Generation X, everybody agreed, oh, yeah, we're massaged, we're controlled, we're conditioned. So the formal causality on the simple level is studying the effects of technology on you and the audience. So when Marshall's talking about cliche, audience is cliche, he's pointing out formal causality, and he says that regular citizenry would not study the effects on themselves as a group mind. You know, so in other words, you're right. They're coming out of visual space, and the first panic about that is, oh, I could be a group mind of being a puppet in a crowd, and that's alien. So anything that discusses that is threatening. So formal causality was left out for 300 years because people wanted to just plow ahead making new technologies because it was obviously going to change and get us out of the mud, so to speak. But then McLuhan pointed out, well, you people are afraid of formal causality, but advertising is using it every day. And this is the unspoken secret that it had become to dominate, and yet it wasn't in the curriculum about what it was. Now, when you read Eric's book, Media Formal Cause, they do quite a lot of complications with the idea, right? He gets into Bacon and Vico and Latin and Greek. Did you read that book?
Not the whole thing, but I read the first longer essay of McLuhan's.
Right. And did you read Eric's new essay on formal causality itself?
The first few pages of it, not the whole.
Right. So you don't know that it's complicated. Okay, so, but if, it seems to me that McLuhan was saying that studying the effects and what the effects on people, media ecology was a threat to Western man and his private identity.
Yeah.
So, is that where we're at in that one? Is that what you were wondering?
I just remember that it brings up that that the formal causality is at the heart of what McLuhan was talking about with the just instinctive avoidance.
Right. Okay, we got Mark here. You want to talk, Mark?
Yeah, I went into my mastering audiobook by Bob Katz, one of the greatest mastering engineers living today.
Yeah?
I can read from the book, which I would have to do because he's the expert. I'm not. If you would like me to
do that.
On
masking? Are you going to give us a definition of masking?
Yes.
Good.
The masking principle, the direct sound from an instrument can mask the direct sound of another. The direct sounds of instruments can also mask the reverberation of the room. There are three types of masking, amplitude, directional, and temporal. Amplitude masking is when a louder sound masks a softer one, especially if the two sounds lie in the same frequency range. This is why mixing engineers use equalization and filtering as well as level to separate elements of a mix. The two sounds happen to be the direct sound from a musical instrument and the reverberation from the same instrument. In the initial reverberation can appear to be covered by the direct sound. When the direct sound ceases, reverberant hangover is finally perceived. Mixing engineers can add a small pre-delay between the direct sound and the reverberation, a temporal unmasking technique which helps the ear to separate one from the other. A good and cluttered musical arrangement has built-in temporal unmasking, separating the timing and rhythm of the instruments, making the mixing process easier. The second principle is directional masking during stereo to mono reduction. In concert halls, to some extent, in stereophonic reproduction, and to a much greater extent in surround sound playback, our two ears sense reverb coming diffusely from all around us, and the direct sound is having a distinct single location. There's a little directional masking. However, in a monophonic recording, the reverb is produced from the same source speaker as the direct sound. And so as the two sounds overlap directionally, we need to perceive the room as being less reverberant. A very live recording hall is bad for mono recording because reverberation will directly mask direct sound. This is one explanation for the incompatibility of many stereophonic recordings with monophonic reproduction. In a two-channel and multi-channel recordings, we can overcome directional and masking problems by spreading artificial reverberation spatially away from the direct source, achieving a recording which is both clear and warm at the same time. One of the first tricks that mix engineers learn is to put reverberation in the opposite channel from the source. So this can help to unmask the direct sound to produce a natural effect. More sophisticated techniques use multi-delays or stereophonic early reflections to yield a more cohesive, natural effect than is possible by simply using opposite channel planning. Cheap reverbs containing no early reflections in the basic reverb wash muddy up the sound. Perhaps it's better to have no reverb than a cheap reverb. True stereo reverbs produce better depth in mono and stereo out models. In natural environments, the early correlated room reflections are captured with the correct placement. They support the original sound, help us determine the distance of the sound source, and do not interfere with left-right orientation. The latter uncorrelated reverberation naturally contributes to the perception of distance. But because it is uncorrelated with the original source, it does not help us locate the original source in space. The better the original room and the miking techniques, the more convincing the sense of space and the less artificial reverberation will need it in post-production. And I would like to add that what Gail and I do is we try to use the acoustic corner of the room and use the amplitude of the room to distance and use as much acoustic instrumentation as we can. And do the placement of using reverb and the natural environment gives us perception of distance and space. And this gives us the illusion of having more instruments in the group then are actually there. And we do this pretty well because we've been doing it for a long time. So that's it.
Cool. No, that's an awesome resource there. Now I'm going to do what McLuhan does, Brian. Take what he described. It's almost a description of the perspective from tactility, modulating all the senses, but in this particular case, the audio. And so the tactility is orchestrating, programming the shifting ratios on all those levels, depending on what the motive is. Now, substitute politics, political or financial categories in what Mark was saying. And you've got Tetrad management.
That's how I was trying to listen to
it. Yeah. You've got Tetrad management. Now, remember, the political division of the CIA or military intelligence that discovered the Tetrad just before McLuhan's book came out in 87, they were remarked amazed when they read Laws of Media. Said, oh, that's what we figured out, and McLuhan does it better. And they called it sociological algorithms, and that was what Gorbachev wanted when, at the end of the Cold War, he said, what you got is what I need, your sociological algorithms. What Mark was just writing there is saying is a typical day in the NSA with their information overload, but they're trying to modulate all parts of society, at least create patterns that would be sent out to the different CEOs so they explain to their employees what they're doing. This is what McLuhan would do. He'd take that stuff, Mark, and he'd say, now, that is a great description of political management today.
Well, I can see that. Absolutely.
Good.
Yeah, like it makes me, because it's all a question of like micro timing.
Yeah.
Like, and
yeah,
just different channels.
For the clarity to happen, you use a pre-delay. So, Bob, what is the pre-delay in a political speech? Is it propaganda or is it an event? A false flag?
No, everything, the whole culture, don't use the term propaganda, the whole culture in action, all the media is propaganda, so we don't use that. The messaging, the coordinating of highlighting that person. So a pre-delay would give coverage to Ralph Nader to come on Charlie Rose and complain about the latest, or give Dr. Dean, come on, explain the role of magnesium, new information. So then that would be... That would be allowed to be put out there, and then the MA would have all their counter arguments ready for that, and then all that would be subsetted into marketing a new product that was sort of like our Remag, but fit into the synthetic requirements of IG Farben. So that would be the meaning of pre-delay, because you're going to delay Carolyn's message, but before the delay, you allow it out. You orchestrate it to come out. You see?
Yeah. To me, in a very concrete recent example, it reminds me of, and especially the phrase of masking, and to emphasize one thing while de-emphasizing a similar thing.
Yeah.
Reminds me of the way lately that I don't know if people in the States are at all aware of up in Canada here, we obviously are very aware of the whole Bill Cosby thing, especially because he was just here in Ontario.
Okay.
But in Canada, we had our own very similar scandal thing just recently where this very well-known radio host named Jean Gomeshi was suddenly went down in flames of, like, it finally came out that all these women were like, I went on a date with him and he punched me in the face. All this terrible stuff. So... And it's all about the same way with Cosby and Gomeshi. They're both just stonewalling, like, no, that's all false. I will, meet that in a court of law if I have to. It's false, blah, blah, blah. So it brings up this strong, there's this whole division with, like, there's this very strong, the people who were protesting outside Bill Cosby's show in Hamilton a couple nights ago, we believe the women, we believe the women. But it's masking this other thing. I'm really wondering, wow, you know what, it would be great if we could extend this we believe the women fad that's, like, I don't mean to totally dismiss it as a fad, but still, this new... this awareness and this feeling of people are all like, are we turning over a new leaf where we will never silence, ignore their voices again? It's like, yeah, when it's a radio host and an actor, we're all about let's believe the women. When it's a prince and a billionaire, it's just like, crickets. Can we change the channel to a new topic? Like, they raise up the one, the Cosby and Gomeshi, but with Prince Andrew and Jeffrey Epstein, it's just change the channel. Let's not talk about those guys.
Right.
Don't believe those women. Even though, like, they, it's like they throw it right in your face that, right now is we believe the women time. And you'd think now is the perfect time to come out with your scandal, but no, it's actually being masked.
Right. Now, there's this new, this Adam Curtis guy who makes these documentaries like Century of the Self and others. He, someone sent around this excerpt from it last week where the Tetra managers purposely create confusion. They don't have an opinion. They shapeshift right in front of the public. So when you're talking about Jeffrey, that's an anti-environment for the Canadian-American thing happening. But remember, in masking, there's either military operations or financial operations that are going on that that's distracting for until the proper time, you know. So it's not just that one event that we know about that's part of masking. There's this other stuff that's not on the radar that's part of the masking or the anticipatory programming. You see what I'm saying? Now, what I say, by 2008, this Android meme programming or masking, very carefully with tetrading as the content, collapsed. The signals got so crossed, and there hasn't been any orchestrated proper masking happening since 2008. And this is what's frightening the people and why people start texting constantly, because they want to see if the world's still there. So, so we're in an interesting new point of post-masking, post-intelligent masking. Now it's just everybody for on their own trying to survive in a digital way, not on their chemical body. That died a long time
ago.
Yeah, Mark.
What I would add to this, because in the third part of the directional masking, since that's the least used in a natural environment, what we do to test frequencies and stuff, we use an anechoic chamber. It's basically a dead space where everything's absorbed, and that can give you a filter or a structure to create any environment and sound or any amplitude or any way to discover what the sound is doing. And so do you think that maybe this bumping texting stuff is bouncing off of this dark echoic chamber, this chamber that's designed to absorb everything, and they could be
That's part of the tetra. The void is part of tetra management. Management doesn't have anything to say in the end. They don't have anything, any solutions. They're just trying to keep their culture going, and that's what propaganda is, keep your enterprise alive, or at least the image of it. So you have to include the voiding, which you're saying is part three.
It's a directional masking during stereo to mono reduction, and it's talking about that the natural environment gives you the best reflection.
Yes,
gives you the
that would be normal polling.
That's the best time phase relationship to the sound, depending where you sit in the room.
You do polling, Mark, without intent to really use it. It's only there to be thrown out for those that think polling is the key. So the collective consciousness, which came in with the Global Village, is not possible by management. They cannot get the superior position. And they will. That is their advantage. They really don't have a role. They don't have a job, but they pretend they're helping and doing all kinds of things and frustrating and presenting, preserving national security, all that juggling is a fake operation to hide the void. And the void is more important than anything. They represent the void. And you can see that in comic books. Yeah, go ahead. I think you want to say something, Brian?
Oh, no.
Oh, so was that Mark trying to say something?
Can I mention something that Corbin mentioned?
Yeah.
On NPR, there was an individual, you were talking about tactility, that was diagnosed when he was young that he was brain dead and paralyzed. But he said to himself, I am not brain dead and paralyzed. I am stuck in my body. So for the next 12 years, you know, he was stuck in front of the Barney, and his mother said, I wish you were dead. He could hear everything, He was a conscious being stuck in his body. So by the age of 16, this one individual came along and decided that they or she or he would create a way for this individual to look at groupings of words and trigger them through synapses, because this individual came to a conclusion that, fuck this shit. I don't want to spend the next 50 years of my body being consciousness where I can't do anything. So he came up where he could actually touch and create words through this computer. And he fell in love, and he married this woman. He's got this big smile on his face. But that stunned me about how a person could be trapped in their body, fully self-consciousness, and has no motor functions, has nothing, but the eyes can see. Nothing. Couldn't do anything. He was completely paralyzed, except he had optics, and he had the hearing, and that was it.
Well, Mark, that to me describes the average citizen today. Now, they talk about the Internet's based on, the economy's based on eyeballs. And,
well, what would happen, Bob, is your new video of you in this five-bodied hand.
Yes.
Roxana did that went into the graphic stage.
Yeah.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, when you watch that, you're directing the Atman. You're directing the bodies through the hand. Because
yes.
We don't even see you. We just see you. That is the most amazing video I've ever seen. It is unbelievable.
Well, that's great. Yeah, Roxy's pretty talented.
Yeah. But what is graph?
Cool. I haven't seen it. I'll have to look forward to seeing that.
I think it's called Translation 2.
That should be your. Well, there's two parts. There's the regular one, there's the graphic one. When you teach your class on Tuesdays, you should open with that graphic one. That's going to blow these kids' minds like, blow their minds.
Yeah, what we have, Brian, is that we record stuff, or she has audio, and we just present audio. No music, no overlays, no graphic garni du jour. So if people want to hear what I'm saying, it's just straight there. Then,
yes.
Yeah, and then Roxana then does her part. She puts the garni du jour on. She plays with it, inserts stuff, and lays over music and other stuff there than just what I'm saying. And the last couple of videos under it's called Translation 1, 2, and 3 are pretty phenomenal. She's either getting faster. Now, what's curious is that Roxana was telling me that she does not put much thought or effort into it. She just gets on there and says, okay, I need an image, and an image shows up. And then she'll go back later to check it, and it's gone. She says, she's pretty confident Ion is directing her dowsing, her Google dowsing.
Oh, no doubt.
That's what it is.
There is
no
doubt. I'm familiar with the programs, and it's the most simplest program of Final Cut. And I use Final Cut Pro, but the templates that Final Cut has, I use it on Chef Jolie's site. It's phenomenal, but she's taken it, or Ion's taken it, to the non-physical. I mean, Bob, it is unbelievable what that video, and I clicked it on again tonight, and it's like going, what the fuck? It's Zappa, it's everything, and B-part, and Kraftwerk, and it's everything. When you do your finger patterns in the graphic mode, it transcends, it explains everything. It finally makes all dimensions understandable. You brought all the bodies together by this graphic presentation.
Wow. Well, Roxana's here. You have a comment on that, Roxana?
Well,
no?
Well, no, I really enjoyed what you were talking about with Ryan.
Yes. The masking?
Well,
or the earlier?
All of it.
Yeah.
And I was reading before for The Vanishing Point, and I was thinking about how we translate our vision of reality. And it was sort of very very good to expand what I was thinking about.
Right, right. I figured what we talk about, those who are tuned in, it's always relevant. You know, we don't fully prepare. Brian prepares a little bit. But we always get into the present, which is what we did, and you're saying, yep, that's what I was thinking about today.
Yes, and today I found a quote by McLuhan in which she said something like, yes, how we try to paint thought, to translate our
yes,
thoughts.
Yes, you mean he quotes Pascal, painting thought.
Yes.
Or, yeah, Pascal, I think it is, right? The painter of thought. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
Well, yes, I think all these translations, the videos and the maskings are actually painting thought, making it visible.
Yeah. Well, we live at the speed of thought, not the speed of light, so we're working with thought. That's partly why people are texting to see if thought is receiving anything or can thought connect. That's the most, you know, we're Thailanders now. We're living like a snake swimming in water, the dance of thought among words, and words would be all the other imagery, all the other media, and thought is in between it all. That's how we're living now. And Mark's saying that your video with my hand signals is it communicates life at the speed of thought.
Yes, when we were doing it, I told you that I really found that cool.
The hand stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I did my dance last night.
I think that the visuals add something to what you're saying.
Yes. When I did my dance last night, you decided that the hand part was the best part, and I should have done more of it. So we'll emphasize the hand. I mean, this whole project.
Yeah, we have to make another take.
yeah, another take. But this whole project began in '76 with the title "Hand Signals for the Blind." Mark, that was my 33-act play, and turned out to be over the last 40 years, 40 years in the wilderness, in a way. All of it was ramifications of the phrase, hand signals for the blind, which was inspired by Zappa's conducting technique. You know how he conducted with his hand signals?
Yeah.
And since they were acoustic, they weren't visual. They were looking, but the joke of it is hand signals for the blind. You have to ESP them. You have to feel them because you can't see the hand signals.
The 33rd Masonic level.
Yeah. And so then that was the first time where I actually did the hand thing. I actually did literally hand signals for that video translation, too. What thoughts do you get from this?
You haven't seen it?
I have not seen the graphic version.
Oh, God, dude.
Yeah.
It is amazing.
Well, I was impressed with translation 3, where I'd say a few words. And then she'd have an image. And she made that, it seemed pretty fast. And I said, how did you find these images so quickly? And she said, she doesn't. It just comes. And she, for validation that there's some other thing going on, she can't go back and find the image later when she's looking for it.
Yeah, Ion's producing that show, no doubt.
Yeah, I think when you're on the drop, you're executive produced by Ion.
Ion is my co-pilot.
Well, he's not even your co-pilot, Brian. He's the guy back in air traffic control funding or organizing it on some higher level or more complex level.
Yeah.
Yeah, like
I had
he's the guy.
Like Moses said, God, how can I do this task? And he said, don't worry. I'll
take care of it. Hey, Bob, today I got to tell you this and I'll shut up. At the end of my shift on the floor at Home Depot, I had this brilliant little 4-year-old girl come up to me next to the ladder, and she was Asian.
Yeah.
And I go, where are you from? And she goes, I'm from here. And I was stunned. Like, wow, somebody finally gets it.
Yeah, they weren't born. They didn't come from anywhere.
Yeah, I'm from here. And she goes, oh, I'm just joking.
Oh, That's good.
Fucked my mind up. It was great. It was wonderful to see the intelligence on a 4-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Hitting it.
Yeah, no, that's pretty prevalent among young kids. I can see that all over the place. So, Brian, do you have a thought that's triggered here?
Yeah. I was reminded about the ultimate kind of the triumphant propaganda narrow casting war victories of when you were talking about how the NSA tetrad managing masking effects, how they use those kind of techniques of that were being described in the masking. They use those techniques in a kind of political culture-wide meme management sense, and that function collapsed in 2008.
Yes.
And I sensed that at the time. I mean, it was on some level, it was fairly plain. And it's just interesting because that after that it's not that tool or that arena that collapsed, just that orchestrating ability, or at least that orchestrating ability by those people, or at least that orchestrating ability in a consistent sense. So the really great thing that happened in, especially in 2009, and still a little bit afterwards too, but that really gets at the heart of the whole, like, why I was so fascinated by this Colbert thing and what the ultimate point of what I felt I was able to sporadically use him for, or abuse him in a better way than he was using himself, was to it becomes kind of, it's a greater thing that after that function collapses, the people who, whatever people or non-people, or meme pentad managing or whatever, whatever entities or people were doing that, they're fully aware that it collapsed, that suddenly now it's the signals got too crossed and now it's just like a wall of sound and it's chaotic or whatever. Every once in a while, still, though, because such an information overload that it just has to statistically, every once in a while things will happen that will seem to still create that old effect by chance. But there was this escalating effect where that was happening more often than it should be happening by pure chance. And it whenever that happens, like a brief freak mutant orchestration suddenly happens, that whenever that happens, it creates the sense to those people that it's not that it collapsed, it's that it was hijacked from us, and this entire time it's been working, and just we don't have access to the operator level of it anymore, and it's not making sense to us, and it's not orchestrated by us, but the orchestration continues.
The after image.
And the truth is it really wasn't. Like, it really did collapse, and it really was in just a freak mutant spasms of orchestration, but not, you know, not being orchestrated anymore.
Well,
but the sense was so palpable that every time one of these freak little bursts of a demon nuclei of orchestration comes out, it just created such a palpable sense among these people that, no, someone else is playing the synthesizer now, that those effects just created such marvelous effects.
Okay, I got that, Brian. Now, that's what I meant by the void is what they're relying on. Now, that's Goldman Sachs. That's that high-speed trading where the computers, you know, they make their millions of a second, and the companies move out of Wall Street, go over to New Jersey to be near the main switchboard so they can get their pulse there a hundredth of a second faster than the other guy. Now, that's that's void stuff. It's even like neutrino. So that's the void part is more real. So Matt Taibbi starts writing a series in Rolling Stone and trying to expose Goldman Sachs and they're running everything. And he's trying to anthropomorphize the void. And Goldman Sachs knows there's nothing going on there. It's not even registerable because it's happening so fast. That's what Matt and the journalists miss. They think there's something out there controlling you. And it's the most nothing cubed that's controlling you. And what you were trying to say there is what I get from that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly that. It really is nothing. But because it's such a, there's still such an overload of noise in it.
Yeah.
That noise occasionally, like, just slips into a little bit of signal somehow.
Isn't that chaos patterning, self-generation patterning? Noise becomes a pattern occasionally for a little while. Now,
it creates this illusion not just to the, you know, the clueless journalist who thinks there's something, but the former managers they can't shake this paranoia that it's not just that our tool collapsed, but that someone else or some other power has hijacked our tool.
Right.